This is Radio Boston. I'm Simone Rios in for Tiziana Deering. If you thought last summer was unusually hot and rainy, you'd be right. And this year, probably more of the same. The National Weather Service is forecasting most of the country will face record high temps, with the Northeast also predicted to have more rainfall than normal. And all this as communities around the region saw 60% more extreme rain, the largest increase in the country, according to the most recent National Climate Assessment. So what does all this mean for us living here? I'm speaking about New England and specific neighborhoods like Roxbury. Here to talk more about this during Earth Week are David Cash, administrator of the EPA's New England region, and Dwayne Tindall, head of Alternatives for Community and Environment, or ACE, a nonprofit that does environmental justice work in Boston. David, Dwayne, welcome.
Great to be here.
Hey, what's up?
David, you recently wrote about an experience you had as a kid, a visit to the New England Aquarium. You connected that trip, I think you said you were 8 years old, with a recent visit back to the aquarium 5 decades later. When you think about the next 50 years, what kind of changes are you hoping to see?
I'm hoping to see the kind of changes that both EPA is investing in right now and groups like ACE and Dwayne and his leadership and communities all over New England and all over the country are engaged in. And that is ideas that are driven by the communities about how they want to move into the clean energy future and do it in a just and effective way. And we're at this cusp at EPA where we're spending billions and billions of dollars in communities all over the country so that we can expand solar and wind and electric vehicles and weatherization, things like that, about what people in the communities really care about. And that's where Dwayne and his team kind of step in a pretty major way.
So Dwayne Tindall, you're doing work in Roxbury at ACE. What does change look like from your standpoint in the neighborhoods in Boston? What needs to change on the environmental justice front?
I believe that it's necessary to change certain power dynamics on both local, state, and federal level for residents and stakeholders to be able to be at a table, a different type of table, and to be able to communicate honestly with the issues that they are facing. This is not a seasonal issue with our community. It's a generational issue that has impacted our health and our well-being for multiple years, for generations. And now this is an opportunity as we are imagining a future of cleaner energy. Where are we? Where should we be relative to the power dynamics of how this society will be developed going in the future?
And what do you mean by that, power dynamics? How does power need to change?
Meaning that residents that are most impacted, communities that are most impacted, many times have not been in a position to be able to yield change from systems, whether it's public or private. We need to be able to leverage our politics, our economics, our social, everything that we have to be able to create a world where one group does not bear the burden, and better yet, a community have a strategy of having a cleaner energy infrastructure going forward.
Okay, so we're talking about the future, but David, Dwayne, you know each other. You met about a year ago, is my understanding, to talk about environmental justice concerns in the city of Boston. Dwayne, if you could bring us back to what your concerns were then.
My concerns and the concerns of my stakeholders were basically the relationship in the past with the EPA and the different federal bureaucracy has been shaky and uneven, and the needs of organizations and the expectations of bureaucracies did not mesh.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a meeting to have a real conversation that if we are going to have this partnership going forward, what are the reasonable expectations that we could both benefit?
That's a fair question. David Cash, administrator of the EPA's New England region, what were your takeaways from that conversation, and was there a call to action?
Absolutely. I mean, the takeaways are just as Dwayne said, that there had not been a long history there had not been a long history of EPA serving the communities that most needed it, that were most overburdened. And, you know, I really saw that meeting last year as a sea change, hearing the communities say, as Dwayne just said, we want a seat at the table. We want you to respond to what our concerns are, what our interests are. And that meshed really well with the Biden-Harris administration's focus on environmental justice and the new raft of funding that was coming from the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law. So that it opened up this new era, what feels like to me a new era of, again, as you know, a new table. We have a new table. It's not just more seats at the table. It's a different kind of table. It's a different kind of table in which we as EPA need to fix some things that we've done in the past. I mean, it's not a surprise that, you know, who's done the permitting of manufacturing facilities and fossil fuel facilities that are in communities that are overburdened. And so we've got a lot of rights to wrong, and I think we're on that path. And the kind of funding that we're getting out into communities, and maybe more important, the process by which funds will get to the ground, get to people who need it, get to families who want to breathe clean air, get to families who want to drink water and not worry that there's lead in the water. That's where we are now. So it's a really optimistic moment.
Okay, so here we are a year later in the same room again here at the studio in Radio Boston. Dwayne Tindall, do you feel that progress has been made? Are there tangible changes that you can point to?
$50 million.
Hmm?
$50 million.
$50 million.
In the grant maker fund that is targeted to Region 1. So we now actually have resources to establish this table, to establish different relationships, to bring in different partners from the private sector, philanthropy, academia, community-based organizations to have this conversation about what should our cleaner energy look like in the future. And conversations without resources is not the same with resources with conversations. And this way we are right now. We are having a real conversation backed up with resources to kind of talk about what does environmental justice look like for New England.
Okay, and what needs to change? What are the benchmarks over the years, over the decades that need to change in terms of moving towards environmental justice?
That the frontline communities that historically been most impacted, the frontline communities that have suffered through poor air quality, asthma, should be at the table to be able to talk about what they need versus what just the private sector or the region needs. It's to be able to have a voice and the power and the leverage to talk what is good for our neighborhoods, our frontline neighborhoods, and how it should impact and integrate with a greater society. For far too long, our communities have been basically an afterthought relative to how energy grids and energy infrastructure is implemented. We want to see what happens when communities are driving the agenda and at the table to discuss what it should look like going in the future.
And we're talking about outcomes, right? I mean, you mentioned asthma rates. Life expectancy changes drastically from neighborhood to neighborhood in Boston. What are the changes you're looking to see on that front?
That since we know this, we shouldn't accept this. Like, we have become very comfortable with the reality that different neighborhoods are impacted in different ways. It's not a secret. It's not some deep policy, like, mystery. We know when you leave one side of the city and then you move to other places, the life expectancy change. A civil society should not accept that.
Okay. We're gearing up for another hot summer. Surprise, surprise. And it's starting to warm up already, which is nice. The National Weather Service is forecasting record high temperatures throughout the country this summer and the possibility of the hottest summer ever observed, which seems like it happens every year now. Mm-hmm. Wetter than normal conditions are also predicted here in the Northeast, increasing the threat of flooding. David, from the EPA's perspective, you're looking at all of New England. How are you thinking about what could be a record-setting summer again?
Yeah, so very concerning, right? Because what we're going to see are heat waves, and we know that heat waves are going to impact the kind of communities that we're talking about, those who've been overburdened. You know, we know, for example, if you were to overlay heat islands that are caused increasingly worse by climate change over the 1930s redlining maps throughout cities in New England, you'd see a high correlation. And so so one of our, you know, the focus, therefore, is to figure out how do we serve these communities in ways that can help combat this. And whether it's investments in climate resilience, in cooling areas, and kind of technologies like heat pumps, which also cool, that can be distributed in these communities, get diesel buses off the streets that contribute to asthma, and get clean school buses, electric school buses, which, by the way, in the last year, $30 million EPA dollars are going to schools throughout Massachusetts. Boston was a big recipient of that, going to get 80 electric school buses throughout Boston and Worcester and New Bedford and Fall River. And, you know, we want that on a, you know, on a hot day, a parent can stand with their kid waiting for the bus, and they don't have to worry that their kid's going to have an asthma attack. And that's the goal that we're getting, and it gets worse because of climate change.
Well, it's Earth Week, and we're talking to David Cash, administrator of the EPA's New England region, and Dwayne Tindall, executive director at ACE in Roxbury. Extreme heat is more than just feeling uncomfortable. It's a health issue. Here's Boston Mayor Michelle Wu back in February talking to us here at Radio Boston on why municipal swimming pools matter.
Because the weather and the climate is changing, and it is now hotter than ever in the summers, swimming pools have now changed from being something nice that you can go to if you know how to swim, to a necessity for heat resilience and taking care of your family when it is so hot outside and it might not be as possible to do other things outdoors in the summer than be in a pool where you can stay cool, and therefore swimming lessons are more important than ever before as well.
So, Dwayne, dealing with extreme heat is a matter of public health and not just recreation. How are folks talking about this and maybe other forms of mitigation in Roxbury?
Heat is life and death, meaning that we could anticipate some fatalities because of heat. We know we're going to see an upsurge in emergency room visits. So when we talk about public health, it's not abstract. It's how our children and how our elders are impacted day to day. And since we know that this is the new norm, then we need to have a budget line that indicates and reflects that, and also a political will to address some of the more difficult issues, not just in neighborhoods and cities, but across the state and across the nation.
Okay, we have two guests here who are both working in the environmental world, but one of you is on the micro level working in Roxbury in Boston, and another one is on the regional, the New England level. So I'm curious to hear how your work dovetails. David Cash, how are you thinking about Dwayne Tindall's work in Roxbury? How can the EPA help Roxbury?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And, you know, EPA, as was noted, large federal bureaucracy. We've always worked on environmental justice, but nowhere near the scale that we are ramping up to work right now. And we've got to learn how to connect with communities on that micro scale, on that block-by-block scale. And we're doing it. And part of it is the kind of funding that organizations like ACE are getting from the EPA. There are a whole host of other kinds of institutions that have applied for and gotten federal EPA money that are going to precisely play that role, the same kind of role that Dwayne is playing of connecting federal resources to the interests and needs of communities. So really big change.
And Dwayne Tindall, I'll give you a chance to respond to that. How do you see, from the community level, your work expanding with the EPA, also with the state and the larger bureaucracies looking at environmental challenges?
It's just the inclusion of frontline communities, changing the culture, changing the habit and expectations of bureaucracies relative to neighborhoods that have a certain lines of communications going forward.
Well, David Cash, administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency's New England region, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And Dwayne Tindall, executive director of Alternatives for Community and Environment, or ACE. Thank you.
Thank you.
In a moment, new reporting explores why Boston police waited years to charge an alleged serial rapist. I'm Simone Rios. You're listening to Radio Boston.